Welcome to the Walking Through Time podcasts. There are plenty more to make your visit to New Norfolk more enjoyable.
Well, out of all the bands or tribes, there was 9 tribes in Tasmania made up of many bands, sometimes 6 to 9 bands. Those living in the Derwent Valley virtually had no reason as far as food source to move out of the Derwent Valley. What is known nowadays as Yabby, they had Yabbies. The land to the southwest, which goes behind Mount Wellington, down to the southwest, that's where all the evil spirits lived, and that they kept away from that. They went through to Sorrel Creek, up to where now Collinsvale is. The only time they really moved out of their own territory was for things like ochre or flint, where they had to move into other tribal areas. As far as food source, they had no reason to move out of the Derwent Valley. During the days of colonial settlement, well, there was a lot of problems in the Derwent Valley as far as uprisings and that with the Aboriginals. That was to be expected. Like, for instance, my great ancestor came from England as a soldier to go to New Norfolk. He was in the 52 Foot Patrol to quell uprisings with the Aboriginals. And I wouldn't be here today unless that happened, because he ended up cohabiting and having a child with a full-blood Aboriginal woman who was not from that area. So that child, she became my great-great-grandmother. When his fellow soldiers left here and went to Bombay, he remained. Well, that's the roots of my Aboriginal ancestry. Now, that soldier ancestor, he had to go back to Bombay to sign off from his company. And it was while he was there he died, so he never come back to Tasmania, unfortunately. But his daughter, Eliza, she became my great-great-grandmother. I spent most of my life as a young person growing up with my Nan and Pop, which is Mum's parents. And old Nan said to me one day, "I'd like you to take your grandfather back to his roots." And his roots, he was born at Tarana on the Tasman Peninsula. So I took him down, though. I actually took him twice. And every now and then he'd say to me, "Oh, stop here, Cobber." And he'd point out different things from his young life, because he was born in the 1800s. And when we got to Tarana, he said, "Oh, that house over there," he said, "that's where I was born." Oh, I said, "Oh, and where did your grandparents live?" And he said, "Oh, they just lived in that bank along here where that little indent is." And I said, "How could you put a house there?" Because it was right on the edge of the water. And he said, "Well, they lived there under sheets of bark and bits of roof and iron." And I said, "Why didn't they live down in the community, you know, where all the houses were?" He said, "Because they weren't welcome, because she was the old black lady." I think that was sad, especially nowadays with reconciliation and acceptance of Aboriginals. I know a lot of people don't like Aboriginals and that, and that's mainly because of some of the abuse that's gone on in different communities in the mainland, but in Tasmania, they're really a peaceful race, and naturally they didn't like their land stolen and different food sources like kangaroos killed and all that. And there's stories of Aboriginal spearing sheep to death, but they didn't eat sheep. And there may be different write-ups historically about where they've speared sheep to death, but they left them there. They didn't eat them. It was not their food. Mm. But here were the European settlers taking their food, kangaroos. And, well, I can imagine what they thought when all this was going on, so naturally there's going to be trouble. Mm. But overall, if you look at the big picture, there's really a peaceful race.
Mm. Whereabouts in New Norfolk, were sort of their settlements or their camps?
Mainly around the river, because there they had water source, food source, and if they left that area from around the river, it was mainly for food source or such, but all their campfires would have been found around the river banks because they are very partial to swan eggs. And the swan eggs they took it in a very good manner, in that they wouldn't just take all the eggs. Like, they take one egg out of every four nests. Very hard for them to catch the adult birds, so there was no problems with there being young swans in the next breeding season. And the young swans they took, they'd probably only take one out of four. They ate voraciously. They had a huge appetite. When food was scarce, it may be the weather was in and pouring of rain, cold winds and all that, which you'd get in the Derwent Valley, and they couldn't get out to get their food source. They'd get the kangaroo sinews and tie them around their stomach. What a good process. Nowadays, people go into hospital and get their stomach stapled to reduce their appetite. So, yeah, they had some good systems. In that area, it was a crossroads. There was actually, that was the furthest boundary of three tribes. If it meant once one tribe had to pass through that area to get to another area, well, that was condoned. That was condoned. As long as they didn't come into their area and start taking their food, no, it was condoned. There was no problem there. It was just a matter of respect for each other's territories. And if I could put it the same now, if you've got neighbours with bordering properties, it's a matter of respect for each other's properties. Those from the East Coast used to go on like a three-year round trip to the West Coast. That was to get brides. That was to stop intermarriage. So they travelled outside of their tribal boundaries to get nice young maidens, to introduce new blood into their tribes, and that was done frequently between all tribes.
And what were some of the sort of customs of the Derwent Valley tribes?
They were one of three bands that actually built like a hut. If I can give an example, my full-blood Aboriginal ancestors come from the West Coast until they dispersed, and that band from the West Coast, they dispersed and went to other areas. My ancestor ended up in the Derwent Valley. On the West Coast, they actually made a hut that could hold 30 or 40 people. They were a dome hut, and those huts were lined with magpie feathers. You go to the West Coast now, this was around the Arthur River and Sundown Creek area. You go to that area now, you will not see one single magpie. And yet, back in their time, if we say before 1800, there must have been a big population of magpies there because they lined their huts. And they had a tradition on the West Coast, much the same as the ones in the Derwent Valley, that they actually would dig holes to contain water in different areas. So when they were travelling, there'd always be a source of water. Like on the West Coast, they actually used to leave abalone shells beside the water holes. At New Norfolk, well, they didn't have abalone shells. And so it was a matter of just getting down with scooped hands and drinking the water. But as I say, they actually built, their lean-tos were like half a domed hut. They were unique in that way. They were really unique with their practices with the swans, with their eggs and that. Because if I go back when I was young, the Derwent River, like from Bridgewater up, the river was black for swans. Nowadays it's all changed. I don't think it was any one thing, I don't know. The Derwent River, like I raced speedboats with some friends of mine in the late 50s and 60s, And we frequently went up that river full bore in speedboats, and so did a lot of others. And I think it just disturbed them. And I know a lot of people did get in these speedboats and chase the swans. And yeah, I think it was a culmination of many things.
The Walking Through Time project has been made possible through the assistance of the Australian Government's Your Community Heritage Program and funding from the Derwent Valley Council. We would like to thank the many members of the public who have given freely of their thoughts and memories to make this project a success.